What's up, literacy advocates? I'm your host, Timmy Bauer, and my guest today is Erin Plummer. She is a librarian in Seminole County. That's here in my home state of Florida. She's been a librarian for going on 3 years. Before that, she was a classroom assistant for a couple of years, and she has a master's of information from Rutgers with a specialization in library science. Erin, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you. We are going to be talking about what you see as some of the big needs for innovation in traditional libraries. Now, I talk to a lot of librarians that are classroom librarians, like in elementary schools. I don't tend on this podcast to talk to a lot of traditional library librarians. So I'm excited to talk to you about this because you've identified a few areas where you think it's really important for the traditional library system to focus on innovating. Yeah. So what are your thoughts? What are some of the areas where you think that libraries should be innovating?
So, well, first I would just like to say too, that we partner with school libraries, especially those of us who work in youth services. In the county that I work in currently, the schools do not have media specialists that are librarians. So in essence, we are the only librarians in Seminole County as of right now. I think if you'd asked me the same question before the pandemic, my answer would be similar, but not exactly the same. And so I kind of tend to talk about things in terms of pre-pandemic and, you know, I don't want to say post-pandemic because we're not there yet, but, you know, sort of how the pandemic has changed library services and programming. So I came into the system from a system that had a lot of money and was a very big system in New Jersey. And so we had lots of different technology and resources that at our fingertips to use. Yeah. And so I came to Seminole County, and it's a much smaller system, much smaller county, much smaller budget. It was a bit of a change for me. I realized that we just did not seem to have a lot of dedicated technology for patron programming, and which would not have necessarily concerned me because there's a lot of really wonderful programming going on. We are in between two schools. We're in between a middle school and a high school. And a lot of those students are coming over to our library, or I should say pre-pandemic, most of them were coming over to our library after school to wait for rides and that sort of thing. And it became really clear to me within 6 months of working there that it would be really helpful if we could do some programming involving technology, even something as simple as creating some creative programming.
What do you mean when you say programming versus what do you mean when you say creative programming?
Okay. Well, I mean, it's all creative. But I think what I mean is opportunities for children to create.
Got it.
In a different way than perhaps we've traditionally done it. So here's an example.
Yeah.
We had programs where there were, you know, crafts associated with it. There may have been a science component. We do have a program that has a science component. And I realized as soon as I came in that we really had, at least at that time, no STEAM type programs. And that's really important. I mean, I'm sure you talked to lots of school librarians, you know, just that exposure. Now I'm not a scientist. It's not my background. I have a communications degree from Temple. But I think one of the beautiful things about being a librarian is that you don't have to be an expert. You just have to be willing to learn. And you really only need to know a little bit more than they do so that you can be part of the process with them. It's a learning process for them. And so you're able to sort of reflect back what they're learning. You don't need to, nor would you want to have this look like a classroom. So
what do you want it to look like? So you've got all these students that are pre-pandemic, you got all these students that are just hanging out in the library because they've got time to kill before their parents come get them. And what does that look like versus what do you want that to be able to look like?
Sure. So when the kids are hanging out, you know, in some ways we think of them as an active audience, but they're really not. They're engaged with their friends. They're looking at their watches. They're, you know, waiting for folks to pick them up. What I really would like the environment to be for everyone really as a place where people can explore who they are and who they want to be. And now that's a big, broad term.
Yeah.
But I think that there is programming that can be put in place that will allow children to create more so than maybe we were doing, you know, were doing previously.
Yeah.
I think one of my goals was to create programming where we could use technology to help kids create videos or
yes, huge life skills.
Podcasts. And one of the projects I was working on was trying to develop a teen podcast for yeah. our library system. Opportunities for young people to express themselves through whatever medium they want and can. And I think the library really should be a part of that, especially because we don't have media specialists in the libraries in our school district. So that was sort of my focus coming in, was how do we make that happen? And I don't, like I said before, I don't necessarily think that it's all technology driven, because there are life skills that are applicable to a lot of different things that don't require technology, for example.
And also there's some really creative things that you can do with limited technology. And I'd love to jam on that a little bit with
yes,
you, but yeah, go ahead. Were you going to say?
So I was going to say, I created an improv program for young people.
That's awesome.
And so, you know, I was something I have an improv. I mean, I have a you know theater background, and I gained a lot of wonderful skills from doing improv. And I thought, well, you know, this is something I could bring here. I don't know how receptive everyone's going to be to this, because this is, we've never done anything like this. This is brand new for our system. And so you know, I did some research. I pulled together some, we did a 4 week or yeah, 4 weeks. It was 1 week a month. And it was a series of, you know, each lesson built on the other lessons, right? So you were scaffolding, you know, like now we're getting to know each other. We're breaking the ice. We're building trust. And, you know, we're sort of working our way up. I'm no expert. I was very lucky to have people I could talk to. And I was lucky to have resources in the library I was able to use. And one of the reasons I wanted to teach this class was because I think it's really important for people to learn how to think on their feet.
Oh yeah.
How to make split second decisions, how to be flexible. It helps build confidence and it helps you be comfortable in front of other people. That's a life skill. I can't think of very many fields that you're not going to be standing in front of people having to think on your feet about what you're going to say.
Even in fields where that's not required, the degree to which you are able to do it is a huge accelerator of your like upward movement in that career.
True. So, and that was well received. I mean, it was something that we were allowed to do. And, you know, I was given the green light to do that. It was different. I kind of try to be a bit of a trailblazer, and I don't mean that like I'm a rock star. I just mean, if I have an idea, I want to see if we can make it happen. And yeah. I kind of feel around and talk to people about, well, how I know it's kind of this vision, but how could we make this something that would be feasible for us to do? And in some ways that was easier to do before everything went virtual, but there, you can be innovative with virtual.
Do you have any idea when things are going to go back to like, what does the library look like now?
Yes. So that's an excellent question. Right now, all of our programming is virtual. We do have some story walks that are outside at parks. This summer, as we move into summer reading, we are going to have a significant amount of outdoor programming in person, as well as virtual. So we're going to have a really nice hybrid mix. All of our outdoor programs will be limited in registration, social distancing, and they will be outside. And
yeah.
What we're getting is that this is what people in our community really want. They okay. really want in-person programming.
Well, let's fast forward.
Now with people getting vaccinated, it's kind of, this is sort of our test to see how this goes.
Yeah. Let's fast forward past the pandemic, because this thing has to end eventually. So it's post-pandemic world. Mm-hmm. What in your opinion are some of the biggest needs at in the library for like innovative programming for youth?
Okay. So I think that the need for tech skills is never going to change. I really do see libraries as being a tech hub.
Yeah. What tech skills specifically do you think?
Okay. So, you know, coding, as cliche as it sounds, is really a great, not only is it a marketable skill, but it's a great way to teach critical thinking and problem solving.
Is it cliche to say that like we need to be teaching kids coding?
I think in the library world, it is kind of cliche to say, you know, well, coding is, you know, but I've seen it. I've seen it with my own kid. And I just know that there's really valuable skills to be gained from that. You know, my child has taken some summer workshops in coding. And I think his favorite was learning how to mod in Minecraft and just loved it. It changed so much for him to be able to do that. And it wasn't just about a game. It was the skills he acquired by debugging and trial and error and trying to solve a problem. And those are things that I think.
Have you tried to teach that programmatically in the library?
Not with technology. We just don't have access to, we don't have access to dedicated computers for youth services. It's something that I was working on trying to secure before the pandemic.
Got it.
So it's something that I would like to return to.
Yeah.
But I think that what I did do in my STEAM programming, I have a preschool STEAM program. What I did do was teach those concepts not using technology. So when we had our technology table, you know, there's ways of teaching that using Legos and blocks, and you're teaching kids about.
There's also like kits that you can buy that are just very self-contained ways of teaching coding.
Yes. Yes. And so what I kind of had to do was work with what I had, but when I was dealing with really little kids, I was able to get them to buy me a Codapillar. And it's just a really great, easy tool to teach kids the basic concepts of programs and loops. And it was a huge hit. And the kids, I mean, these kids would take cups and they would just debug so that they could get this thing to go through the cup's path. And they were so excited when they figured it out. And to me, that was the essence of my program, that this should be fun. This exposure should be really fun. It should really pique interest, and it shouldn't feel like school. It should feel like exploration and discovery. And that's how I want my programs to feel, like exploration and discovery. I want those kind of wow moments.
Let me ask you this, Erin. Do you need dedicated computers for learning coding in order to do a coding program? Would you not just be able to pick a time and section off certain computers and be like, these computers are for this?
Not at our branch, unfortunately. We only have PACs. So we have a couple of laptops per branch, but if we wanted to do a coding program, we'd have to pull every laptop from every branch and send it to the branch that was doing the coding program, which is exactly why I wanted to have those laptops.
What do you mean you only have PACs?
So we only have public access computers. So we can't use those for programming.
They can't be used to write to you. Really?
No.
What?
We don't have computer labs. We don't have a computer lab. All we have are the public access computers. And so you can't commandeer those for a library program, which is why I wanted those laptops.
Who's in charge of that rule?
Those are decisions that are made way above my pay grade.
Oh, this is what frustrates me about government stuff.
So that's where laptops would really come in, would be really, really useful.
Or just some mental innovation of going, okay, I'm saying it, not you, Erin. Mental innovation of going, okay, here is a need, and here are some tools that will accomplish that need. Yeah. And we just have this arbitrary rule that says you can't use it for it.
So in our defense, we do have dedicated laptops. And we could have those sent to any branch, you know, and ahead of time, if everyone knows, those laptops can be sent to a branch and utilized for programs. You know, that's kind of creates a strain on the branches where staff would be using those laptops for other things. For example, right now with Zoom, you have to use the laptops or the iPad. You can't use the public access computers or even the work computers because they don't have webcams. So now you are impinging on any sort of virtual programming by requiring those laptops. So it was clear to me that we needed dedicated computers, dedicated laptops to use for youth services exclusively, because we can't plan programs unless we know we have the equipment dedicated to us to be able to plan them, because we're going to have to base our attendance on how many computers we have. We need to make sure that we can incorporate what kind of software that we're going to need on those computers and be able to purchase that. And so they sort of looked at me and said, okay, well, you figure out what we would need. Yeah. I'm no expert, but you know, I talked to people and, you know, I came up with a laptop that I felt would be reasonably priced, but would be, you know, strong enough to do sort of the basic stuff that we would need to do.
How much does a typical laptop in that that's capable of that typically cost? Like what area?
I think for what our purposes were, I think I was between $600 and $800 per laptop. And okay. This is a while ago, so I don't have the specs right in front of me. And to be fair, you know, I could have met with someone and probably figured out someone, I mean, probably could have had someone build stuff for us. I don't know, but I just said, well, here's the ballpark of what we would need. You don't need a gaming computer. There's so much online. You just, you know, it's not the biggest and the best computer.
I build PCs for fun. I've built all my friends' computers.
I should have talked to you.
I built the one that's across from me right now. You can build a computer for relatively cheap. Not building a gaming computer.
Right. Yeah. My husband builds his computers. So,
innovation of going, okay, like, what is it that we need? What is it that mm-hmm. the kids need that are coming through the doors and mm-hmm. what tools and how can we mm-hmm. think outside the box to have the tools to do that thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
And, So for me personally, the takeaway is the biggest innovation need in the library system is mental innovation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to be able to be resourceful too. You have to be able to look around and say, what can we do with this? How can we take something that someone's doing for all this money? How can we take a piece of that, the most important essential pieces of that, and make it work here and make it work with what we've got? That's sort of been my focus lately, especially now that we're virtual. How do we bring those experiences to a virtual environment? Some things translate well, some things don't translate as well, but it's an amazing opportunity. And here's the other thing I really wanted to mention, because one thing we have gained as a gift in all of this is an awareness of how many people were not able to access library programs before the pandemic. Now we have tools, libraries are putting tools in place if they didn't have them already to make that more possible. Are we reaching everyone? No, and that's a whole other conversation about access. And that's a whole different podcast, because I could talk about access for a couple hours.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I don't want to lose that. I don't want to go back to now we're just having experiences that can only be experienced in person, because this is really important. Why, when we ask why people aren't using the library, I think this is something that gets left out of the equation sometimes, is that there's people who just for a variety of different reasons can't get to the library. It may be timing. It may be transportation. Our library is not, there's no bus stop near our library. The bus stop is way up a couple miles. So how are people supposed to get to the library if they take public transportation? Now they've got to walk. So there's a lot of things to consider when you're talking about access, but this piece is something that we are going to need to continue to nurture and grow. I see us moving much more into a hybrid model as we move forward. And that's what my library system is doing. And I think that's a good way to proceed for the foreseeable future. Yeah, this isn't going to end. We're not ever really going to go back to normal. Our normal is now, and that has to be embraced, and the opportunities have to be looked at and utilized now.
Yeah. Something I've shared before on this podcast that I just want to say again, because I think it's so valuable, is just if you're somebody that wants to have a program where you're training kids on a life skill, like editing video or mm-hmm. coding or whatever, you don't have to have the skill. You can literally just pull up really good YouTube tutorials and go through them together with the kids.
I had a podcast of my own and I was completely self-taught. I'd never done audio editing before. But it's all self-taught. And that was one of the reasons I wanted to do the teen podcast, because I wanted to give the teens an opportunity to learn that process. It's a very satisfying thing to be able to look at something and say, I made this, I did this, I made this happen. And to be creative with it and to give people the tools to be able to be creative with it. So that was one thing that I felt would be potentially very fulfilling.
Agreed. Aaron, thank you so much for being on the show. How should listeners connect with you?
Thank you so much for having me.
How should listeners connect with you?
So they can certainly email me. So my email address is aaron.plummer@outlook.com. So that's my personal email address.
Are you on Twitter?
Contact me there.
Are you not?
I am on Twitter.
Okay.
And now I have to tell you, it's not exclusively a library account, but I am at Indie Stacks. That's all together. So they are welcome to follow me there. INDIESTACKS.
Thanks for being on, Aaron.
Thank you.